We'll get right to it. In 1957, this is a true story. In 1957, there was a proposed highway that was going to be cutting through a town. And in this town, there was a shrine that these Buddhist monks took care of. And in the shrine was a gigantic, really, gigantic clay Buddha. And the town notified the Buddhist monks and told them that they were going to have to do something with that shrine, that big Buddha, because there's a highway coming through. So they had to do something to make sure it'd be safe. So what they did was they brought in a crane operator, and they decided to pick up the Buddha and just move it to a different part of town out of harm's way. So crane comes in, all the monks are standing around, the crane starts to lift up this huge Buddha, begins to move it, literally just begins to move it, and it begins to crack. Right away, it just begins to crack right then and there, right? Just the last thing you want to have happen, that's what happens. So the head monk goes up to the crane operator, and he starts going like this to tell him to stop, to put it down. Apparently, the Buddha is so much heavier than anybody expected that it was. Nobody thought it would be this heavy at all. So they put it down and they talked amongst themselves. They were going to have to bring in a crane on the next day that was a lot bigger than the crane they had to be able to accommodate the weight. So they put up some tarps because a storm was starting. They put up some tarps to cover up the Buddha. The monks went back to the monastery. Night comes, they eat, they go to sleep. In the middle of the night, one curious monk gets up with his flashlight, goes out in the middle of the night, lifts up the side of the tarp, and looks, shines the light, and looks at the cracks. And he looks at one in particular, and when he shines his light into this crack, he sees something shining back at him, which is actually impossible because it's a clay Buddha, and there shouldn't be anything shining back at him at all through this crack. And the first thing you're thinking anyway is, why should there be a crack? These are, you know, Buddhist monks. I am sure they haven't committed a sin amongst themselves in years, maybe in their thoughts, perhaps from time to time. But why should this crack even happen to these Buddhist monks who are like probably all such nice, religious, holy guys, let alone the crack that happens in our life when we're just trying to move something from here to here, perhaps ourselves, and try and do some good in our life? Why should there even be a crack that we have to deal with? Because we're kind of good people too. So in working with a woman, I met a woman a long time ago, and I met her at a moment in her life where something cracked. And she was having a nervous breakdown. She was just like everybody in this room, well, not like everybody in this room having a nervous breakdown, although perhaps, maybe that's why you're here. She was like everybody in this room, just a regular woman doing her life, doing her thing. She wasn't, you know, somebody who was an outsider, you know, had done so many drugs, it finally caught up with her. She was a regular woman. And all of a sudden, in the middle of her life, 44 years old, bam, something cracks, and literally, she cannot cope with her life at all. She's having a breakdown. And why should that happen? She was such a good woman. She had a job. She was a mom. Everything was working out so well. I'll read you a line from what I know is one of your favorite books, the Old Testament, something that we all keep by our bedside, to comfort us before we go to bed. And it says, after 40 years had passed, an angel appeared to Moses in the desert. After 40 years, an angel appeared to Moses in the desert. And then the Lord said to Moses, now come, I will send you back to Egypt. After 40 years, now come, I will send you back to Egypt. Now, an interesting thing in Jewish mysticism, that if you want to be involved with the Kabbalah, what you are told, what you're instructed to do is not even to pick up the book of the Kabbalah and begin your studies until you're 40 years old. They don't even want you picking the book up. Okay, this book of mysticism. You would think at 17 years old, pick this book up and then you can save yourself all those therapy bills. Who wouldn't pick up the book early? They tell you don't. It's not time yet. Not until you're 40. After 40 years of being in the desert, Moses is sent back to Egypt, which we know the root of the word Egypt is confining, constriction. Why would we be sent back to a place of constriction after all these years of doing our job and having our life? Why in our 40th year, why in midlife would we be called back to Egypt, to a place of constriction, to a place that doesn't work, to a place that's in bondage, unless... And if the Lord is calling, and if you don't like that word, use any other word. If life is calling you, there's got to be a good reason, and that much we know. Right? See, if we don't understand what the crack is, if we don't understand that the crack is a conversation that life is having with us, that we are being called to pick up the flashlight just like the monk did, go to the Buddha in the middle of the dark of the night, and in that darkness shine our light on the crack. Not on the whole Buddha, on the crack. If we don't understand that the crack is a conversation, man, when it comes, we totally flip out. And we totally think something's wrong. And we totally look for someone to blame. And here we have the Course in Miracles that says this line. It's one of those lines that you're supposed to say all day, on a whole day, out of your 365 days, you say a different affirmation each day, and you know it, and you think it, and you study it, and you apply it. This is one for this day. And it says, I am not the victim of the world I see. I'm not the victim of the world I see. I am not the victim of the world I see. If there's a crack in something, the only way we're going to know what that crack is to pick up the flashlight, just like the monk did, in the middle of the night, in the middle of our darkness, in the middle of the breakdown, and shine it into the crack. And he did it all by itself. And we usually do have to do it all by ourselves. When this woman, in the middle of her life, had her breakdown, which is the last thing you expect, last thing you want for anybody, except, you know, maybe you want a couple of your exes to go through that experience. But otherwise, everybody you love, you wouldn't wish that on anybody. Your life literally, it breaks down. And when she took the flashlight and she shined it on the crack in her life, she was awakened to a moment in time in a playground where she and her mom were swinging side by side on the swings. And she saw herself swinging, and she said, oh, I look so happy in this moment. And I said, how does your mom look? She says, oh, my mom is so very sad. My mom is always sad since my dad left. And it turns out her mom was clinically depressed at that point, by that point. That's what we would call it now. They maybe didn't have that name then. And she said, my mom is so sad. And what happened here in this moment when she shined the flashlight like the monk on the crack, when she was called back to the place of constriction, to Egypt, when she was called back to look inside that tight place of bondage, what did she find? She wouldn't have looked back unless she had to. We don't look into the crack unless we have to. We don't look for the cracks. We don't want them. We don't like them. We think we don't need them. But when we understand what they are, we take a light and we shine them, and she sees she's sitting and swinging with her mom. And in that moment, she felt, and she's six, and at six, we might not have a large vocabulary of words, but man, we've got a vocabulary of emotions that is deep and real. We feel our lives. We feel our parents. We feel what they want us to be. We feel what they need. We feel them. Doesn't matter what they say, we can feel what it is they're needing. And she felt in that moment that her happiness was making her mother even more sad. And it's true. When you are in despair, your happiness brings a great pain to you. It is hard to watch the happiness of others, not because you're jealous or envious, just because it feels so painful. And every time she realized I was happy, her mother got annoyed. Her mother would get angry. Her mother would be sadder. Her mother would be in pain. And you know what she figured out in that moment? She figured out something so flippant and genius that is not unlike what we figure out when we're six and we feel responsible for keeping our parents happy. Because nothing stands between us and the end of the world but our parents. They are our gods. In the book Toxic Parents, open it, page 1. You want to know how you figure out what God is? Take your parents and multiply them by 100. And that's how you get to what God is. God is exactly what your parents are multiplied by 100 when you're 6. And if they're displeased and if they're in pain and if they're hurting, you will do whatever it takes to bring them back to a state of peace and happiness. We all do this. This is how much we love our parents. We will give up whatever we have to give up. We will do whatever we have to do. And in that moment, she decided, I am going to take my happiness and I'm going to put it into hiding. And by doing that, I'm going to cease my mom's suffering and I will join her in her sadness. And you know what? It worked like a charm. It was like a deal made in heaven. Her mom needed her happiness, and she needed her mom's love. I mean, it was a perfect barter. She needed her mom to love her, and in exchange, she gave her the thing that meant most to her. She didn't give her like a purple crayon or, you know, a book that she liked. She gave her the thing that meant most to her in the entire world, and that was her happiness. And she gave it to her mom in exchange for the love that she couldn't live without and the happiness, maybe that little tiny bit of happiness would bring her mother up and buoy her a little bit. And at 6 years old, she made a decision, from now on, I cannot be happy. And you know what? She stuck to that decision, right? We don't know this is conscious, and you know all this stuff happens in the unconscious. That's why we're talking about a crack. We're not talking about a crack in what we know to be true. What we know is one superficial level of what we know about what life is. This whole spiritual path, it's about the level underneath that level. That's what's so beautiful about this path. We cannot know what anything in this world means until we go downstairs, until we look inside the crack, until we see what's beneath, beyond, within, underneath. What's happening? When we see that, then we understand, oh my God, I'm not the victim of the world I see. But you know what? Until we look in the crack, we're totally the victim of the world we see. My God, and we call everybody and we want to enroll them into how much of a victim we are. And we only call the people who will agree that, oh my God, I can't believe that, poor you. We want those calls first. Of course we all do. But we can't move, we can't progress, we can't get on with our life, we don't grow, no growth, as long as we believe I am the victim of the world I see. And anytime we are believing that, I'm telling you, we're not growing, period. There are no exceptions to this rule. Oh my God, that's such a hard thing to say, which is why I blame it on the Course in Miracles and not on my own teaching. Because it's easier to say, well, the Course in Miracles says that, it's really not me. And that doesn't even make any sense at all, that we're not the victim of the world we see until we shine the flashlight, until the Buddhist monk got up, looked under the tarp, went right to the crack, shined his flashlight on it, and saw, much to his own surprise, saw something shining back at him. And nothing's supposed to be shining back at you from clay. Clay doesn't shine back at you. It's a dull, earth-colored substance that has no reflection. It didn't make sense. He didn't even know what he was seeing. And yet something shone back at him. And so he moved in closer. And he moved in closer with the flashlight. And the closer he moved, the more he saw something shining back until his curiosity got the best of him. Because it's like, whoa, what is this? This doesn't even make sense. He takes the butt of the flashlight and he starts chipping away at the crack, the edges of the crack. So the crack starts widening. Right? That's what we do when we look inside the crack, when we know that the crack is a conversation about revealing something that needs to be taken out of hiding, that needs to be set free. Moses was called back after 40 years in the desert. He said, come, it's time now to go back to Egypt. It's time to go back to that which is still in bondage. And in the story, we're talking about the Israelites that are still in bondage, but that story has nothing to do with the Israelites. It wouldn't be around to this day if that story was just about, oh, let's hear a nice story about Jewish people. I mean, that would be nice for all the people who love Jewish people and want to hear Jewish lore, you know, all 27 of them. But for the most part, the story is not about Jews. And it's not even about Moses. It's about this journey that we take, that we have to go back into the place of constraint, of bondage, the place where we shut the door in our own selves and put something into hiding, hid something away so we can take it out of hiding and set it free. That's this journey. Everything on this whole path is about the journey of setting ourselves free. I mean, I'm happy for the Israelites, especially because, you know, I'm descended from them, so I'm happy we're not slaves today. But nonetheless, it is about those parts of us that remain in bondage, in ignorance, because we don't know what we did. She didn't know what contract she made. She didn't remember that. We don't remember the contracts we make at 6 years old. Contracts that make so much sense at the time, they are downright ingenious. They're ingenious. Who would think of such a thing? I'll give you the thing that I love the most about myself as my most precious gift because I love you that much. Here, take my happiness. And maybe with my happiness, you'll be a little bit happier because her mother's sadness must have killed her. What child can be in the room and bear the pain of their parents' sadness and grief and despair? Here, take mine. Take my happiness. Oh my God, what a gift. What a gift. What a sacrifice. The only problem with it is it works when you create, when you figure out, when you invent that kind of contract as a child out of your wise imagination. But then you forget it. It happens at a deeper level of mind. And we live in a world that doesn't talk to us about this deeper level of mind. So as we get older, what's in the contents of this deeper level of mind gets deeper and deeper until we totally don't even remember what we did. All we know, all she knew, is she was a woman who was always sad. She had a family, she had kids, she did everything she was supposed to do, but she was always sad. And you know what? Everybody told her, well, not everybody can be happy, so maybe that's just kind of the way you are. Your mother was sad, you're sad, and everybody told her, just get used to it, just get into it. And we know that. We live in a world that tells you don't ask for too much. Happiness might be too much to ask for. So live with your sadness and make the best of it. Look, you have a nice husband, you have kids, you have a job. And one day she cracks. One day we crack. One day something breaks down. We get fired. The lover who we loved leaves. The husband, the wife. Something happens to our child. Something happens to our parent. The roof caves in. Something happens that breaks down. And if we don't understand what a breakdown is, if we don't understand that after 40 years had passed, an angel appeared to Moses in the desert and the Lord said to him, now come, I will send you back to Egypt. We don't understand. We're being sent into the crack. The crack has divine origins in it. And what's divine about it is inside the crack is something we need to see shining back at us. In the song that Carol sang, it's from Cirque du Soleil. Who does not like Cirque du Soleil or love? Applause, one applause, yes. It's a quieter group over here, more constrained. Cirque du Soleil, on every level, so fabulous. This song, Let Me Fall, is from Cirque du Soleil. They write all their own original music. But listen to this song. Someone I am is waiting for my courage. The one I want, the one I will become, will catch me. Great line. Oh. The one I want, the one I will become will catch me. So let me fall if I must fall. Let me fall if I must fall. I won't heed your warnings. I won't hear them. I won't mistake this breakdown for what people, oh, poor dear, she's having a nervous breakdown. Poor her, poor her. She, what a victim. She's such a nice person. This shouldn't have happened to her. These Buddhists, such a nice community, shouldn't have happened to him. I won't heed the warnings of what the world tells me about what this crack actually is, because the world doesn't know. Doesn't know. It doesn't know this deeper mind. And what we don't know, we laugh at, we make fun of. We say, oh, that's ridiculous. Well, so be it. But you know what? If you're looking to understand your life, you only have one direction to look in, and it will not make any sense unless you pick up the flashlight and look inside the cracks of what is happening in your life. And when she looked in there, she realized that she has remained that sad girl tied to her mother who has already died and passed on. She is carrying this legacy of sadness with her throughout her entire life until one day something cracks. And it doesn't crack because we did something wrong, because that's what we think, or somebody else did something wrong, that's what we think, or the government did something wrong, that's what we think, or our neighbors did something wrong, or our boss did something wrong, or our parents did something wrong, because that's what we think. It's not wrong. You know, on this path, the most outrageous way to turn around, to be able to even mouth the words of the Course in Miracles, I am not a victim of the world I see, is to ask a different question. Not what is wrong here, but what is perfect here. And perfect not as in the word nice or good or Hallmark, not that kind of perfect. Perfect as in complete and whole, the definition, the Greek root of the word perfect. What is complete here? What's whole? Where is the wholeness of life actually happening right here? Meaning, not what is wrong here, or why is this happening to me, but why is this happening for me? Because if there is perfection at work, and if you haven't been here for the last 2 weeks, the talks are on my website, augustgold.net, for free. Download them and listen to them, because each week builds upon the last week. You can miss some weeks, but listen to them on tape anyway. It'll help you fill in the blanks of what you might not be understanding. And we spent a lot of time talking about wholeness and perfection, how all of life is designed for that. She's been carrying her mother's sadness this whole time, and she didn't know it until the crack happened. She lit a flashlight, didn't know it. And what did she see? A decision that she would now give up her sadness so that her mother could live a happier life. Well, you know what? It didn't really work, but it was her best effort. And here she is, 44, and the effort has broken down as it must. Let me fall. Listen to this line. Let me fall if I must fall. We think we're falling into the nothingness, or the despair, or the everlasting ocean of sadness from which we will drown in the tears of our sorrow. And what we are told, what this song tells us, and what this song which is the song of this path, is someone I am is waiting for my courage. The one I want, the one I will become, will catch me. What is shining back to the monks? He is not going to weigh so hard with the butt of his flashlight in the middle of the night that all the monks start listening and hearing some commotion going on outside where the Buddha is, so they start coming downstairs and seeing what he's doing. The next thing you know, they're all going back up to the monastery, getting little picks and axes, and they come downstairs and start working with him with their flashlights, their picks and axes, until the morning comes and what's revealed underneath the clay exterior of this Buddha, but a gold Buddha. Solid gold, made of gold, which is why the crane couldn't raise it. It's a gold Buddha. That's what was shining back. It is this gold Buddha that remains in bondage in Egypt, constricted, hidden away. Where was the thing this woman needed most in her life? Did she need her husband to be a better husband? Did she need better children? Did she need a better job? Did she need a better house? Did she need better, you know, a Kelly bag or an Hermes bag? Did she need a bigger whatever? What we need is the thing that is always showing up in our life that looks disguised as something completely different, usually like a crack. And if we don't know that crack is a conversation, the crack in our relationship, the crack in our marriage, the crack in our work life, the crack in our health life, if we don't understand all of it is one conversation that life is having with us, and it's having it with us because there is a piece of the golden Buddha we don't even know exists within us. And this is Buddhism. This is not me teaching like anything new. I'm just recycling all the old shit, put it to you in a new way. Right? Because you're not going to go read a book on Buddhism this afternoon, but I can tell you that Buddha said, where is the great Buddha? The great Buddha is within you. It's your true nature. He was the one who pointed us within, saying you're going to find this gold Buddha within you. But you got to look. And you know what? We get so busy in our life. We're so busy with our clothes and dyeing our hair and shaving our legs and whatever it is we are all doing and paying our bills and going to job and kids and puppies and this and that and doing everything, remodeling, redecorating, and thinking about the mysteries of the world. If we only knew the answers, we'd be happy people, that we forget to look within for the very thing that will take us out of bondage. So you know what life does? Life helps us out right there. It helps us out right there, and it just gives a little push in an area of weakness. It cracks. Why did the golden Buddha, why was it revealed? It was revealed after the crack in its outer covering was cracked. Why did this woman come upon a contract she had made with her mother, except that one day she broke down and she couldn't take one more step living such an unhappy life? And she found something shining back to her, and it was the possibility of making a new contract, of taking back her happiness, of ending the contract that she set forth when she was six and creating a new one now. Not from now on, I can no longer be happy, but from now on, she saw herself as the little girl on the swing, and she asked her, what is the new decision we need to make, the new contract? If we don't have to make our mother happy, what is the new contract we can make? And she said, the new contract is from now on, I smile. I smile. You think, what, is a smile going to pull you out of a clinical depression and a breakdown? Yeah. Because she had gotten to the source of what the crack was in the first place. You can have 1,000 medications for something that's never going to heal you until you open the door and you set my people free. Go back to Egypt. Go back to the place where something stuck, where something is covered over. Go back into that place of constriction, the place you don't want to look, the crack, and look there. So when they saw the golden Buddha, it was like, how is this even possible? It took historians and researchers to figure out what happened centuries before when the Burmese army were expected to go through their town. And the monks responsible for the shrine hundreds of years before said, you know what, they're going to see this gold Buddha. It's gone. It's not ours. They're going to take the Buddha and kill us. So let's cover up the Buddha with about 8 to 12 inches, almost a foot of just plain clay. When they see the Buddha, they're not going to want it. It's just a big old clay thing. They're not going to want it. The Burmese army comes in. They don't want this clay Buddha because it doesn't look like much of anything. It worked. It's covered over. Our ways of covering things over works too. Do you love that moment? Ooh. Are you talking about me? I thought we were talking about the monks in Asia. Every single story is about us, right? We cover it over, and the thing is, we forget. The whole village forgot. They forgot what they had done after the reign of terror, the Burmese army coming through. They killed off the people who remember. Nobody else remembered. And we walk around and we don't even know that there's a golden Buddha shining within us. And we have to be pushed. We have to be pushed. What's the line? The Lord will make you abound in prosperity. But look at that word, make you. Make you. I don't like it when my own lover makes me do anything I don't want to do, let alone when the Lord makes you. You know, when the Lord makes you, it's going to happen. Carol has to work a lot harder. The Lord, on the other hand, gets our attention right away. She made a new decision and was able to take her happiness back out of hiding. Moses went back to Egypt to free that which was still in captivity. We have to go back sometimes, and we don't like to hear this because it's like, oh, that's childhood and it's painful and I don't want to look there. But when we have a crack going on in our life, a conversation's already happening anyway. You're having it. You're having the conversation. And I am not a victim to the world I see means you're not a victim to this crack. Sorry. Sorry. That means we got to pick up a flashlight and look inside it to find out what is hidden beneath the surface that needs to be taken out of hiding, out of bondage, so we can have it. She couldn't live without her happiness. We can't live without our happiness. We can't live without our wholeness. We can't live without all the different parts of who we are. So life enables us to do that by going back, but we need to understand that when the crack comes, the crack is a conversation about our wholeness. The crack is a conversation about our health. The crack is a conversation about the person we are destined to be. The crack is a conversation about the bigger life that lives within us, that which needs to be taken out of hiding. If we fight with the crack or argue with it or blame it or bemoan it or wish it away or send it up in a pink balloon with a special meditation, we're missing the point. It's a conversation. It's not going away until we pick up the flashlight. Right? So listen to this. It's the last few lines of Sweet Darkness by David White. No, okay, wait a minute. I don't want to read that. I want to read something else. Listen to this. I want to read the Tao Te Ching. It's far more important at this moment. The Tao Te Ching, verse 32. You'll like it. Believe me. It's good. Although next week we'll spend a lot of time with David White. He's very good, just not this moment. This world is nothing but the glory of the Tao. Okay, for those of you who don't know, the glory of life itself, the glory of the one, the oneness, the one mind. Whatever you call it, the neshama, the breath, God, life. This world is nothing but the glory of the Tao, expressed through different names and forms. Okay? It looks like many different things, but it's really only one thing it's saying. One who sees the things of this world, okay, in parens, the cracks of this world, as being real and self-existent, to him every word becomes a trap. And everything becomes a prison. If we look at things and we don't know what the deeper truth is, what's really going on, that crack is a conversation that life is having, that everything is life talking to us, that everything is life moving through us, moving us into our wholeness, for us who don't know that, who think what we see is all there is, to him every word becomes a trap and everything becomes a prison. Right? One who knows the truth that underlies everything lives in this world without danger. Right? Whole different world. To him, every word reflects the universe and every moment brings enlightenment. To that woman, her breakdown was the beginning of her life as a happy woman. To the monks, the crack in the Buddha that they explored became a valuable piece, a valuable icon in their community, which became an outrageous fortune for them. And isn't that what Buddha says? When you find that golden Buddha within you, which is exactly what the crack is opening to, when you find it, you too will have found your treasure. We need to know the truth that underlies everything that lives in this world, that everything is one thing, and that one thing is life moving you to your wholeness, which makes this crack a conversation in your life, a conversation that we need to enter. And when we do, to him, every word reflects the universe and every moment brings enlightenment. For today, enough said. Thank you so much.